100th anniversary of the organization's first game, and Brendan Shanahan, the president of the Maple Leafs, joins us in studio. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
How was your summer?
It was good. It was a good summer.
Get away?
A little bit. Just a little bit in August. So August can sometimes be a quiet month, and took advantage of it, and spent a couple weeks away.
So you've gone through the whole cycle in just a few years here. Tear it down, put it back together again, and now everybody expects you to win a Stanley Cup. Yeah. So congratulations.
Ah, thanks. Yeah, yeah.
Well done.
Read the papers, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, clearly you have to be optimistic with the way things have developed, and we congratulate you on your role in this, and I know it was a group effort, but this is the first year you really get a chance to kind of feel what you've done. I mean, last year was, I don't think, shocking to you, but pleasantly surprising. Now you think you got something.
Well, I think last year what was a little bit shocking to us was, when all these young players came to camp, you have hopes that they're all going to be good. And that, you know, we saw a little bit, we brought them all up. If you remember 2 years ago, they all got little cameos with the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, yeah.
We put them back with the Marlies for the playoffs. And we liked what we saw, but you don't necessarily know whether that's going to translate after another summer. We didn't know how Marner was going to be coming from junior. At the time, we didn't know we were picking first overall. And so you've got all these young players coming in, and you hope they're going to be good. You think they're going to be good, but realistically, you're not thinking you're going to have 8 or 9 rookies that are making big impacts. And they all did. They all came in, and they all lived up to their promise. And it was a fun year for them. So early in training camp, I think internally we started to think, you know, I think a lot of people in the city had thought it was another rebuilding year, but I think that we really did feel like there was a chance these guys might sneak up on some people.
But it really was perfect when you think back to last September, because the Blue Jays were all the rage. Everybody was following them. The World Cup of Hockey was here. Mm-hmm. The Grey Cup was coming. There was so much going on. Austin Matthews wasn't even with your team. He was with the young guns at the World Cup. So it really, I think, at the time kind of allowed you to have a camp while your coach wasn't even with you for most of it, and sort of go under the radar a bit, which is very much different, I think, it's going to be this fall.
Yeah, and you know what, though? If you're in this business to become a good team, or you're in sports, you should be in the business to become a good team. At a certain point, you're going to have pressure and expectations, and I think when you look at some of the players that we have in this organization, it's not like pressure and expectations are suddenly something where they're going to say, oh, wow, what is this? And
right.
They also, it seemed to me, are recognizing early in their careers, even though they're young players, that the more they lean on each other and the more they come at you as a pack, the safer they'll all be, whether it's success or failure, you do it as a team. You know, and that's something that I give a lot of credit to Mike Babcock and to Lou Lamoriello for sort of instilling that culture in them.
Like, are you thinking like in terms of the media, or do you think the public in general, the city, or just that everything that comes with Toronto?
I'll be honest with you, I think that these players enjoy it. I think that they've come in here and sort of ignored things that were maybe said in the past. And they don't want to play anywhere else, it appears to me. They like it here. They like what they've built as a reputation. They like the relationship that they've built with their fans. They enjoy how their fans see them. And I think that they're having fun with it. Even the players that were here in some of the more difficult years, in talking to some of them, they can feel the change that's occurred. And this can be a fun city to play in. And there are a lot of players. I said this before. We had all these new players here. Some players don't want to play in an environment like this, and that's fine. They can go play somewhere else and have a lot of success. But there are a lot of players that do want to play in a market where the games mean a lot to the city.
With Brendan Shanahan, the Leafs president. So I grew up in an era where the phrase "the sophomore slump" was ever present. It didn't just relate to hockey. In fact, it related to all sports. As a former player, did you go through a sophomore slump? Did you find year two tougher?
No, I was so bad my first year that I couldn't have gotten worse my second year, so there were no expectations.
Do you believe in the theory of the sophomore slump?
I don't know. Like I guess the way I'm answering it, not really. And I think that you you know, one thing that we've talked about, and we talked about at the end of last season, and you've heard some of our players say it, is we're not going to sneak up on anybody anymore. But to see the work that they put in, and again, I'll go back to the leadership that they have with their general manager and their coach right now, preparing them even at the end of last season that this year would be much tougher, and that if we're going to keep taking steps, that nobody could really go back this summer and just spend time listening to how happy everybody is that they had to put the work in. And we're very confident that our players did put the work in.
It's been a funny couple of years of kind of busting myths in this town. Toronto fans won't accept a, whatever you want to call it, a teardown or going with kids. Well, it turns out they did, and they kind of liked it. Young players can't play in this market because it's too hard. Well, it turns out they can. And one of the last ones was that we heard was free agents, high-profile free agents, don't want to come to Toronto because there's too many expectations.
Well, and they got one.
And they got one in Patrick Marleau. He, to me, if there was a surprise, it was after so many years in a very quiet market in San Jose, he chose to go to the noisiest market. Now, I'm sure there were a whole pile of reasons behind it. But when you guys went out and pursued him, did you think that he was the kind of guy who would say, yeah, I want to be in Toronto?
You never know. And I think that it's the job of Lou to put that question out and see what kind of an answer he gets. And he got a favorable answer, and it sort of grew from there.
Mm.
And so over the course of a few days, Lou was able to get it done. And I think that it excited our players. And when I say our young players, they're all younger than Patrick. So it excited the Nazem Kadri, like our veteran guys who are Nazem and Morgan and Jake. It excited them as well that a player of his caliber would choose Toronto and say, I want to come be a part of this. And I give the players the credit. It doesn't matter at this point with, you know, what I say or even Lou says. The biggest influence that we have and the biggest attraction that we have to other players are the players on in the dressing room and on the ice. And they did a great job last year, and they put the work in, and they look like they were enjoying it. So I think that's how you start to change the perception.
You talked about Lou Lamoriello being the architect of the acquisition of Marleau. I wonder, and I go back to the days when the Blue Jays were having success, and it was Pat Gillick was the general manager, but Paul Beeston was the president of the ball club, and Beeston was actively involved when they went out and tried to get free agents to come to Toronto to play baseball. Were you involved at all in the Marleau scenario?
I think in this day and age in hockey, everyone's involved, quite honestly, with the cap, in a cap sport. You know, Brandon Pridham's involved. Lou involves, Mike, of course. You got to make sure that the coach is on board. So Mark Hunter, Kyle Dubas. Lou has done a really good job, and I think that that's just the realities of modern sports now, is when you like a player or you have a certain situation, you might be the driver and the architect of this deal. But you check all the boxes. You check to see who are the prospects that we have coming down the pike, and you check to see their timeline of arrival. Then you talk to the capologist, and you start thinking about signing some of our players 2-3 years down the road. And if all the boxes check, you go forward and you try and make the deal. Whereas, 15-20 years ago, you like a player, you go get the player.
Yeah, and that's all internal stuff. But I'm just wondering whether you made a phone call, or whether you talked to him, whether you were part of the pitch.
I wasn't a part of the pitch, but I do have a relationship with Pat. And at one point, when Lou was having a conversation with him, I was in the room. The way it works at the time, we've got sort of everybody, all hands on deck. So yeah, we're all sort of in and out of the room. And, I think that in talking to Patrick afterwards, I think that Mike Babcock was a real motivating force for him to come here as well. He's had a lot of success with him in Olympics, and Mike was very enthusiastic about what he thought would be a real good role for Patrick. And so I think that was probably more than anything, and the comfort with Mike, and then just the young players and the direction of the team.
We talked a lot when you made the decision to hire Mike Babcock, and you did because he was available, not because you thought he would take you to a Stanley Cup that first season. It was sort of the opposite. And it seems like he's now had a couple of years, one really tough year. Last year was kind of a breakthrough year. It seems to me like this is the year where he's really going to have to, you know, ride herd on these guys. You've got some young guys who now have a few bucks in their pocket. You know, they've signed some contracts over the summer. Connor Brown and a couple of other kids and guys who have money come. And it's very easy, and you've seen it over the course of your career, for that to become a distraction, changes the way guys want to play. Is this of the, I mean, every year is important, and I understand that, but is this kind of where he's really got to start coaching this team because there's so many other things going on?
You know, it's funny. I agree with you in that, yes, you'll say that all this year, and then we'll say it all again next year. And then, you know, you could win a Stanley Cup at some point in your life. And I remember being in Detroit, and we won a Stanley Cup, and I remember that summer we were all saying, next year is such a big year for us because we have to prove something different. So it doesn't matter whether you have failures or successes. If the year that you stop saying that this is a big year, or that this is like the year where I prove myself, is probably when you really should step aside and not do the job anymore. So this is a huge year for Mike. And like I said, I'm not lying to you when I say they're all going to be.
Because when he talks about the sophomore slump, what we've seen before is young guys, they come here, they're all, you know, they've got spit and vinegar, they're running around, everything's exciting, everything's new, and then all of a sudden the second year, it's not all new again, and some of it in January, it's a little harder, it seems, and like I say, and then contracts become part of it. So it does change from when it's all young guys. And was that part of the reason why you brought in a Marlowe and a Ron Hainsey and a Dominic Moore, some older guys, to make sure this thing stays in the direction you want it to go in?
Well, that's definitely something, especially Lou has such a deep respect and value for having veterans in the room. And, but no, you're right. It is something that, as I said earlier, it's something that we talked to the players before they took off for the summer. But Mike is the kind of guy, regardless of whether we win or lose the night before, he shakes whatever happened the night before off, and he shows up the next morning with this sort of brand new attitude that today is the most important day in your life. And that's really an amazing gift that he has as a coach. Because
was he always that way, even when he coached you?
He really was. He didn't hold things. He didn't carry things for days. I've had other coaches, and we've seen other coaches where, you know, they sort of almost can't get over like an issue or a game or a giveaway or a bad loss, and it drags on for a while. One of the more impressive things I've seen with Mike is his ability the next day to almost come in and look each guy as he's passing each guy in the dressing room, look him in the eye, say their name, say good morning, regardless of who was a plus and who was a minus the night before.
With Brendan Shanahan, we've mentioned Lou Lamoriello on several occasions. Lou is entering his third year under his agreement. There was some speculation during the course of the summer that there would be a renewal announcement. I have not seen that. Where are you at with Lou and his longer-term viability in the role he's in?
I think if you know Lou and you know that I've probably learned a little something under Lou, those are the kind of things we focus on our job. We focus, like I just said, on the job that we do that day. And the rest of it usually takes care of itself. And I know I'm going to get asked that question this year, and I just want to be focused on the present as well. And the rest of it, we really don't think that it's not something that you ever comment on publicly.
But translation, he's not going to say. That's
well,
what that translation
fair
means.
Enough. But you would understand that as much respect as we have for Lou, Lou is not a spring chicken anymore. And I don't think he'd be insulted by me saying that, given that I'm not a spring chicken either. And there comes a point in your life where you start thinking, yeah, I like doing this, but maybe there are other things I'd like to do. And do you have any sense as to whether he's thinking about retirement, contemplating that, or is he just full bore? Is he more likely to stay for 5 years than for just the rest of the
season? Yeah, like I said, I won't say one way or the other. I just know that I saw Lou today, and he had a ton of energy. So he's all right. Ready for this season. He was working hard all this summer, and this is an incredible man who just doesn't slow down. And he really is a medical marvel when you think about some of the guys that I will bump into, peers and friends around the league, that it can be a draining job to be a general manager of a team. And they still shake their head at him and the amount of work that he does and puts into it.
So at the beginning of last year, it was easy to set a target, and the target was make the playoffs, and you achieved that, and in many ways overachieved. Year two becomes a little harder, isn't it? You can't sit here and say, we're ready to win a Stanley Cup. You may hope that, but you can't say that. So what is the goal? And are you big on, you know, putting that dartboard out there and saying, okay, hit the bullseye?
Yeah, you know, it's a hard question to answer, because in one sense you don't ever want to put a ceiling on what your goals are,
mm-hmm.
And then at the same time you don't want to overstate things, and you don't even also want to announce what you're thinking. So certainly last year we felt that, especially as the season was going along and these players were responding, and they were good, and we were getting contributions from a very deep lineup. We started to realize that we really felt that we could be a playoff team and a dangerous team in the playoffs. Now, we as much as we played well, we keep things in perspective. We lost in the first round of the playoffs. We made the playoffs in game 81. So we're not running around doing any victory laps in our offices, mm-hmm. and neither are our players. But certainly we don't want to take a step backwards. I think that our players would be the first ones to say that they enjoyed the taste of the playoffs last year, and we want to grow on that.
Is it okay to talk about Stanley Cups now? Is it okay to say that's what we're trying to do? Because in this town, it's difficult because you being from here, you know, Leafs win a few games in a row. People say, hey, this team might be pretty good, and that you always hear people say, wow, where's the parade route going, and da-da-da-da-da. Is that getting ahead of yourself? Are those words that you can't say yet because this team is so young, or can you?
Well, I think even before we had the collection of and the talent that we had, you know, we've stated for the last several years, we want to build a team that is capable of contending for the Stanley Cup over a long period of time. That is our goal. So the answer is no. I think you have to say the Stanley Cup. Even when you are in the infancy of your building, you have to constantly have reminders and photos and pictures of old glory years where guys were hoisting it. Just, I'm a big believer that it's not like a bad word or a secret that you can't talk about. This is why we're in the business. This is why I came to Toronto. It's why Lou came to Toronto. Mike, it's why the players want to be in Toronto. It's why players are in all these other cities. And we've got these competing general managers coming up against us. It is, this is the business that we're in. And so we're all building toward getting a team that's capable of winning a Stanley Cup.
Damien, I think, talked to earlier about, you know, with respect to Marlowe, you know, could you have gotten Marlowe a year before? And we'll never know the answer to that. But the suggestion has been probably not. He probably had to see that this was a team capable of achieving certain things in order for you to sign him. And that is not unusual. That translates through all sport. Without naming names, pointing fingers, telling absolute stories, are you starting to sense that yourself, that there is a greater interest among players in playing for the Toronto Maple Leafs than 2 years ago, Brendan?
Well, I'll tell a story I told somebody earlier today. A couple years back, we were in the running for, there was a free agent. I guess I shouldn't mention his name because he plays on another team now. But I was driving my son to school. He was 12 at the time. And I said, you know, he chose another team over us. And this was one of the top teams in the NHL. And my son, as 12-year-olds can sometimes be so blunt, he says, well, do you blame him? And the reality is I looked in the rearview mirror
That's what he said?
Well, as he's playing his video game, yeah, I know. Yeah. You know, it's
can
like
blame him?
My son sort of just tells it like it is. And he's like, do you blame him, Dad? And, you know, we didn't have at the time Mike Babcock. We didn't at the time have Lou Lamoriello. We ourselves were in our infancy stage. And so the answer is yes. You having good players, having a better environment certainly makes it a more a safer, more attractive place for other players.
At the beginning of last year, the greater concern, I mean, there was obviously concern about the number of rookies on the team at the beginning of the year. But in a general sense, I think people would have said, well, the concern for the Toronto Maple Leafs is their blue line, and they're going to, at some point, they're going to have to go and get veteran players to fill in that blue line. And then the end of the year came, and you know what? The blue line wasn't nearly as bad as I think most experts anticipated it was. What can you put your finger on a, not necessarily a need, but a want right now?
Well, it's funny when I hear stuff like this, because we all want to get better. We all want to, you know, we can spend a whole lot of time looking around the league at other players and waiting for that one big trade. And I'll sometimes hear different trade options that are going through the media. And when teams have good players, they don't want to give them up. Like, we've got some good players, and we don't want to give them up. So mm-hmm. I don't know why another team would just sort of say, we've got this fantastic defenseman, or we've got this fantastic centerman. Would you like to have him? You know, and unless we have to give up something we don't want to give up. So I think you are always sort of on the lookout for potential deals. But at the same time, I think what Lou and Mike and our entire staff has done a really good job. When I say entire staff, I also mean like our sports science department, our trainers. They've really, Kyle Dubas, Sheldon Keefe with the Marlies, they've done a really good job of concentrating and focusing on what we do have.
Okay.
And making sure that they are going to be the best possible players they can be. So the development aspect of this is so incredibly important, so that your current players improve, so that the players you've drafted and are back in junior or with the Marlies are really, hopefully, potentially going to be Leafs one day. And then you don't have to go out and hope and wait for help from another team.
So let's talk about a couple of guys you do have. Three guys, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, and William Nylander. Two of them made the all-rookie team. One of them won the Calder. The other one might have made the rookie team if not for a pretty good player in Winnipeg. But this isn't 1992, where you can keep as many guys as you want. There's going to be pressure, cap pressure, from these three guys. We've seen it with other teams not being able to keep their young players. Can you tell Leaf fans right now that you can keep these three players, pay them, and keep them on this team and keep this team competitive?
We believe so, and we hope so, but you never know until you actually get there. And this is where Brandon Pridham does such a great job for us. We really... he does a great job making sure that we don't get caught by surprise. So we understand those challenges, and it's our job. You know, it's our coach's job to sort of, like I said earlier, like, worry about today and then plan for tomorrow.
But you were also saying you have a capologist, and when you're looking at players, we're slotting 2-3 years from when they're going to. So you are keeping an eye on tomorrow.
It's management's job, on the other hand, to right. be thinking 2-5 years down the road, and that are some of the conversations that go on when you're making decisions on the team.
Do you get concerned when you see contracts like McDavid's? I mean, not that he's not, I'm not here to ask you whether you think he's worth it, because I think we all know he's a very, very talented player, but it's a big number. And we all know that agents and players use as their point of leverage, my guy is as good as that guy, and that guy got this, so my guy wants that.
Yeah, you know,
he used to do it. Yeah. He used to work it.
Yeah, no, not you. I stayed within a system in Detroit to keep that team together.
Oh, that's true.
And for, you know, didn't go after free agency, but that's because I was in a winning environment that I enjoyed coming to work every day. And so rather than work on hypotheticals, we try to control what we can control, which is we want this to be the kind of place that, similar to like I just said, where I was in an organization at one point in my life where players knew they could get more if they went to unrestricted free agency and knocked on all 30 doors. But instead, we want to create an environment here in Toronto where players want to stay and they want to grow up together and have an era of hockey together.
Do you think you can do that?
I hope so.
Yeah. I mean, that's so basically you're hoping you can create a culture here where guys will, theoretically, take a little less to stay and be Maple Leafs.
Well, I don't know how it has to play out. I mean, but certainly we hope that all of our decisions and personnel decisions are based on how we build our best team. And, you know, as far as going down the road of hypotheticals, I learned actually in my other job when I was doing suspensions that you could do this all day if you start. You wonder about these things yourself, you internalize, but they're not things that really are fruitful or productive to talk about out loud.
So last year you were finding enough guys to fill out a lineup. You managed to do it and have a pretty good team. This year all of a sudden you seem like you have too many players and not enough spots. And some young guys, Andrew Nielsen, Travis Dermott with the Marlies last year, Carl Grenstrom's come over from Sweden. And then you got your first round pick, Timothy, how do you say his name? Littlejerk?
That's it. You just said it perfectly.
Do it again. Do it again. So, Timothy.
Yeah.
There seems to be a sneaking suspicion that maybe you did pretty well by getting him where you got him because he was a kid who got sick last year. He got mono. Yeah. Does he have a chance to be a Toronto Maple Leaf this year?
You know, we have camp in a few days, and it's not for me, the president of the team, to start telling you like who has a chance and who doesn't. That's the great part about training camp is all these kids are preparing, and let them tell us. But I will say it is a nice problem to have right now that we do have a lot of good players and they don't want to give up their job. So it becomes harder to crack this lineup when you've got a bunch of players that say, no, I want to earn this living and I want to be here. So one of the things, like I said earlier, that we've really tried to focus on is making sure that if players aren't here with the Leafs and they're somewhere within our system, whether they're playing with the Marlies or somewhere else and we're sending our development staff out to see them, we just want to make sure that when they're ready, that they are ready to step in and play for Mike.
Do you think you might have got a little lucky with him, a little lower than he might have otherwise been?
We're very happy with that he was
there. Let me
guess, you
were surprised he was still available.
Yeah. That's the first time that's ever been said, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, well, I'll just say, look, we were very happy that he was there. He's obviously a defenseman. He's a right-handed defenseman. He plays a puck-moving game, and he is beginning the odyssey of all the work that has to go into becoming a National Hockey League defenseman. It's a lot of work to do.
Before you go, this is the you will celebrate the 100th anniversary of the launching of the franchise in Toronto. December 19th is the actual date. Historically, teams in this kind of position have gone to various lengths to bring out new paraphernalia, uniforms, colors, this, that, and the other
thing. These guys are always celebrating something.
I understand, which is where
I'm
going here.
Some anniversary of this. Celebrating some guy. They're always doing
something.
So
what are you wearing on the 19th?
Toronto Arenas.
Toronto Arenas?
Our original sweater. We're wearing the Toronto Arenas sweater on that game.
I'm guessing it's not going to be a woolen sweater that the guys are going to steam themselves to death in.
It's 16 pounds.
It's not 16 pounds.
Will copies be available?
Yeah, 50 pounds with sweat.
Will copies be available for fans to purchase if they are so interested?
I suspect.
I suspect you are right, too.
So you're not bored of the job yet?
Not yet. No. I love it. I love it. You know it's my passion.
We know you got to go. Congratulations on success so far. And this is another significant stepping stone this upcoming season. We wish you good luck with it, and hopefully we'll have a chance to chat on numerous occasions over the course of the year.
Great, guys. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. Brendan Shanahan. We'll be